We're delighted that this episode is sponsored by our good friends at DGR Slatter Decorators in Jersey.
Like us, they're a family that cares, and family is the cornerstone of everything that they do.
With 47 years' experience spanning three generations, they've built a legacy of excellence and expertise.
So whether you're looking to add a splash of colour to your living room, revamp your bedroom with some intricate wallpaper, or perhaps a complete home makeover, DGRSlatter.com are there to make your vision a reality.
When I felt bad about myself, the friends around me really reflected that. You know, funnily enough, we really do accept the love and the treatment that we think we deserve from other people.
Oh my goodness, yes. I mean, that is so true.
And when I started to improve how I saw myself and how I felt about myself, it's really interesting how the people around me changed and changed for the better.
Yeah.
Really improved.
And look, I think that's the same for me. You know, when I met your dad, like literally, I felt I had on the floor self-esteem. I genuinely thought that I was ugly, that I was a bad person, that I deserved to be treated badly. Mm. And because of that, you know, what a coincidence, because I felt that I deserved that, the people that I hung around with, I was bullied. I was in an abusive relationship. And that literally was my headspace. And what's amazing is that I met your dad and he built me and helped me to realise my own self-worth. And then as a result of that, my friends improved as well. And now we've got like such lovely people around us. Because I think the thing is, when you realise your self-worth, you stop tolerating what you know is unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I was just so grateful that there was people that were willing to give me the time of day and spend time with me, that I was okay being taken
like
advantage
it.
Of. Because I was like, I didn't think I could do any better. I didn't think people would find me interesting to be around. Yeah. So once I had that, meant I was willing to take so much more than I deserved because... Mm. I was just grateful to have that.
It is an interesting thing that we will just tolerate what we believe we deserve. And I suppose that comes from the fact that we've never considered setting our value. You know, we never consider what is our worth, what do we want in life. And when you start setting your value and being congruent to that value, then you will not tolerate those things anymore.
What's really interesting, particularly with you two, is that me and your dad have always championed you both, right? Mm. So we have always told you how amazing you are because we believe you both are and always did. We've told you, you know, like what kind, gorgeous, intelligent, fun human beings you are. Yeah, isn't it funny that despite that, because, you know, we all know we're a product of our environment, but that despite that, that you both went on to have issues with your self-esteem. And that's, you know, because, you know, are we born with self-esteem or without it? You know, when we learn it through life, don't we?
Absolutely.
And I know it's my favourite saying, you know, that and that is that, you know, how you see yourself is based upon how other people have made you feel and not always the people that are close.
Absolutely.
To you.
And I think that Hunter would say the same. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but... You know, both of us never had any doubt at all that you both thought we were amazing and that, you know, you thought we were just the best children you could ever have had. And
because,
you know,
we are, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just factual, isn't it?
There you go. We overcooked it a little bit now.
just to add in there, though, for anyone listening is, I mean, ultimately, because when you're born, it's a blank slate. Mm. If you encourage your children and tell them that anything is possible, then... That's what they will believe. So
no, absolutely. You know, and I think we definitely believe that. We definitely believe that. Like, we never, I mean, one thing that you always taught me was that, you know, there's no problem that can't be fixed. And those values absolutely 100% were so set in me and helped me so much. And parents can do so much in terms of helping their children grow and, you know, the views of themselves and their views of the world. And you definitely helped us so much with that. I think the difficulty that we both faced was then probably, well, definitely was when we got to school. And I think that's where, you know, obviously you can't be around your children 24 hours a day and you can't sort of mitigate the effects that others will have on them in other areas of their life, like in school, for example, which I think is where me and Hunter both struggled.
I think that as a parent, you, when your children go to school, you think you're handing them over to someone who will give the same message as you, and it's not always the case. And you know, I got bullied at school. Eva did, and I know you both did to a degree, not so much Hunter. But a lot of the bullying isn't always from the other students at school, is it? You know, quite often it can come from teachers as well, and you know, you get the wrong messages from teachers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it is hard when you, especially in a school environment, I think there's a lot of competition. You feel a lot of competition that I think sometimes when you come out of the school environment, suddenly you have more perspective and you realise that actually it didn't really matter that much. But at the time, it feels so important that, you know, everyone's competitive in terms of, everyone's compared in terms of their academia, their performance. So there becomes quite a lot of rivalry in schools. And I know that's something that I faced a lot, was because I was so academic, I got a lot of sort of, I would say, edging on a lot of bullying towards putting me down because I was excelling academically. And I remember getting to the point where I actually didn't want to do well anymore, because that made me different, and that made me be, I felt bad. I felt like I was making people feel bad for doing well. Mm. And I remember actually coming out of an exam, and I really felt it was so hard, and I really didn't feel I'd done very well. And I remember saying to a friend that, you know, oh God, that was so hard. I don't think I did well at all. She said the same. And then when we got our results, I actually did much better than she did. And she wouldn't speak to me because she was like, you said that you found it hard. No, you didn't. I actually didn't do well. You did. You were just saying that. And it got to the point where I didn't want to say how I'd found an exam because I was scared that I might actually do well and then people would think I was just saying it.
But didn't you used to find, because I remember when I was at school, I used to find that after an exam, I would talk to someone and I'd think that exam was really hard and they'd go, oh, it was dead easy. And it used to make me feel like, well, I must have got it wrong then. Yeah, I must have got it all wrong.
Yeah,
and then I'd get higher marks than them, but it's because I suppose, put more effort into it and thought it was hard because of that.
I came across this a lot, and I think it's because when people say it's really easy, I often think it's because they've misunderstood the question and not fully
not fully
taken into account like the entirety of what it's asking, and they've just taken the surface a lot.
But then it makes you feel like you've got it wrong. I remember until I got results, I was thinking, oh, I made a right mess.
But that's the thing, everyone's comparing themselves, everyone's compared, and that's where I was at, where it was like, I didn't want to, of course I wanted to do well. You know, I always wanted to go to Oxford and I knew I needed to do well and I wanted to do well. But then at the same time, I didn't want to do well because I knew that made people feel bad. So all I wanted, and it feels sad for me now to look back at that, but at the time, all I wanted was to be like everyone else. Mm. That is the problem.
It is a problem, but then at school, you are either in the academics or the populars, aren't you?
Sport and populars usually go together.
I mean, there's more diversity than that.
There probably is more than that, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, well, in our day, we only got two categories.
One or the other. But then again, I didn't feel like I fit because there was like a nerdy, clever group.
Yeah, that is true.
In the library all the time. And let me tell you, I felt that at Oxford. We'd go for dinner and everyone would talk about books. And it was like being at a book club. I didn't read. I watched Breaking Bad when I was in my evenings. Like, I had to do my reading for my degree. I don't want to be doing reading in my spare time, you know what I mean? So that was my thing. Like, I didn't feel like I fit with them, but then equally, I didn't fit with, like, the popular group, the group that were going out. I didn't know where I fit, and that was awful.
And this is exactly it. I think when, as young people, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, I think as young people, we try and fit into a category, and if we don't fit into that category, then instead of realising that there's actually something blooming special about being you and unique, you then perceive yourself that you're not popular, that you're not good enough.
It's like you've got nothing. Yeah. That's what it's like, because you don't fit, you don't have something. No, you don't have that thing to hold on to.
But it's this box thing, isn't it? It's like, 100%. We've got to fit in a box. And did you find that, Hunter? Like that you didn't fit in this box, you didn't
definitely
fit in that box. Because to be fair, both of you are very similar. You're both very academic.
You fit in my box. We're on the same page.
No, you are. You two are definitely in the same box. But you're both very, very similar. The only difference that you both have is that obviously your schooling was predominantly associated with girls, yours was obviously associated with boys. And that's interesting.
It's a different dynamic, I think.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, that is quite interesting. However, sort of bringing this back to how loving ourselves and accepting ourselves is a good way to start to create happiness. Mm. I think that what we're saying there is that at that time, when you were younger, and it's a shame really, because you know, we don't learn this till later in life, but if you both would have gone, do you know what? I don't need to fit in a box. I'm perfectly happy the way I am. Then you wouldn't have gone on to have the symptoms of being made to feel not good enough.
That would have changed everything. And I think, I know obviously we're talking a lot about school because that's our experience, but I think that, you know, so many adults still feel that way because of school.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't feel academically that they were good enough, or because they didn't have friends at school, or for what, I mean, there's a whole host of reasons why people might fall into one of those categories. Yep. Because I'm talking about, you know, being on one side, the fact that I felt that I was making people feel bad because I was academic and I hated being academic. But equally, there'd be people that looked at me that wanted to be academic and they didn't feel good enough because they weren't academic. And,
yep,
you know, everyone's trying to compare themselves to others and be something and feeling that they don't fit or they're not good enough. And the truth is that none of it really matters if you have, like you said, self-acceptance.
Absolutely.
If you accept yourself for who you are and you're reassured in who you are, then none of those things matter.
And I suppose
why do you think it lacks so much then? Because one of the biggest, you're talking about adults now, one of the biggest situations that we find with adults and that we've worked with over the years, imposter syndrome.
Oh, massive. You know,
it is massive.
Yeah, and they've got this great job. And just to explain imposter syndrome, I'm sure you both know what it is, but imposter syndrome is like, you know, you got this great job and you feel like, you know, you didn't deserve to get it. And there's going to come a day where they're going to find me out.
I felt that at Oxford. Genuinely, I felt that at Oxford so much. I thought, I have no idea how I've got in here. I just thought, I don't know, the things that were in my head, I thought maybe I just charmed them. Well, maybe they just thought, do you know what? She's really nice. Everyone else is really clever, she's nice. So we'll let her in.
But you did the same. You did the same at uni in America.
Yeah.
You said, because I said to you, how do you find it academically? Because obviously it's predominantly American kids. And are you finding yourself, where are you? And you kind of alluded to the fact that, oh, you know, I'm not sure. I think I'm going to find this harder. But you are fitting in.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me with going over there was not necessarily academically, but more personally. I felt like everyone knew what they were doing. Everyone felt like they knew who they were, what they enjoyed doing, what they wanted to, you know, like their personality. And I came into it having been through, obviously, sixth form, doing A-levels and everything like that, and been so focused on my work that when I got there and had more time to consider everything else, I felt kind of lost personally.
Yeah, who am I?
And felt out of my depth there because I felt like I didn't know what I had. I didn't know what I had going for me, and everyone else was so confident in that.
And to be fair, you didn't... Yeah, you had sort of acquaintances at school, but you didn't have like a big friendship group
all. Yeah.
So I can understand why that had been the case. Yeah. But, you know, going back to, look, you know, is anybody born with a high level of self-esteem? No. We neither have it nor don't as such. So, you know, who are the self-esteem builders and who are the self-esteem stealers?
But interestingly, interestingly that we obviously always looked out to build your self-esteem, but it was external influences that tried to pull it down.
Yeah.
And not always. Self-esteem stealers... And I'm going to put it out there, can be a parent, right? But bear with me. You know,
I know where you're going. There's some criticism coming my way here, I think.
Absolutely not.
All right, okay.
Not.
I felt it. Maybe. You know,
self-esteem.
Right.
Maybe there's some guilt going on there. Yes. Just putting it out there.
I think we need to have a chat, Mr. Speakman. Self-esteem stealers can be parents and without malice. And what I mean by that is that, how often do we hear in clinic where somebody will say, you know, I've got really low self-esteem, I don't feel good enough, and it's because my parent was always bringing me down. They were always saying, you can do it this way, you can do it that way, you can do it better. I was never good enough. And the thing that they don't realise is that the reason your parent invested that much time in you and wanted you to be better is because actually... they really loved you, and as their ambassador here, they wanted to give you all the shortcuts and the best way forward. But they're delivering.
Essentially wanted you to be better than them.
Exactly, and that comes from love. But their delivery may have been wrong. But even though that is with the best of intentions, because their delivery might not have been quite so, and because as a kid you see that them picking you up constantly must mean that you're not good enough. This can lead to low self-esteem, which is obviously things that we go through in therapy.
Isn't it interesting how we just assume so much stuff? And you know, if we had accurate communication and said, this is why we're doing this, and this is why, and this is what we want from you, everyone would understand. But we just assume that with that message that the child knows why you're doing it, but they can get it completely the opposite way around.
And I think you touched on a really good point there. Actually,
oh, thanks.
For a change. Hey. I'll actually give you something on this one. But no,
we should remember this day.
Write it down. Make it
and the time. Specific, yes.
No, I think you made a really good point, because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening probably really resonating with some aspects of what we're talking about, in that, you know, they felt not good enough and probably thinking, well, how do I fix that? Like, what do I do? How do I, if that's me, if I'm listening and I'm a person that feels like I'm not good enough, feels that, you know, felt inferior or I didn't fit, how do I deal with that? And I think that sort of questioning who and their motives is actually really key, because one thing that I know, and I'm sure Hunter will say the same, that I thought when I got into Oxford, that would be it then. I would have the evidence I needed to go, oh, I obviously am really clever and I am good enough and I do fit somewhere because I found somewhere and it's all going to be plain sailing from here. And actually that didn't happen, because I got there and then, as we said, I thought I had imposter syndrome. You know, I had imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I thought that I'd got in on a sympathy vote. And, you know, I had experiences, as you know, with a really bad lecturer.
Tell us about that.
But yeah, I mean, well, it was a bad situation. Basically, in a nutshell, I'll do a quick one. A neuroscience lecturer that I had for a tutorial basically told me that I was not good enough and that I shouldn't have been accepted into Oxford based off the fact that I hadn't done biology A level, which is suggested requirement for my course, but they decided I didn't need it. They decided off my interviews and my entrance exams that my performance was high enough that I did not need the biology. But he sat there and asked me some biology questions. And because I didn't know, because I'd never done a biology level, he basically just stripped me down and told me that I, you know, shouldn't be there. Just, it was awful. And obviously, when you're already doubting your self-esteem for someone who you perceive to be of a higher status, which goes back to what you said about parents and things like that can have such an influence, because I perceived him as such a higher status because this man's so qualified and he works for
you
Oxford.
Have no idea how, when you rang me that day in floods of tears telling me what this professor had said, I was literally ready to jump in the car.
It broke me.
And instead of being the calm mother and showing him the error of his ways, I was going to give him a quick, swift kick up the ass, and then I was going to be giving him a, don't you talk to my princess like that.
I mean, to be fair, I will say Oxford were amazing, like, in how they dealt with it. It was one person, and I immediately, you know,
can I ask
it.
How long had he been there?
I don't know the answer to that question, but what I do know is we got told that he got moved to medical students, because apparently they actually are a lot harder on medical students. Good luck with that one.
Oh, thanks.
Wow. Okay. Apparently, that's what we got told. Medical students, they're like really hard on them, and they were like, he should never have been moved out of medical into neuroscience. To be honest, I don't think anyone should be spoken to like that, irrespective of who you are, what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I think it's last, because doctors need the confidence to be able to treat
apparently
people
not.
Well.
No, they don't. No. No, they don't. But my point being is that, you know, and like I say, I'm not, you know, Oxford were great. They dealt with it and spoke to them about it. And
well, that could have gone totally in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and I don't blame Oxford for that. Yeah. But I'm just saying that was one individual, and the way that I got spoke to, I at that point was like, I knew I wasn't good enough to be here. That's
forget
all
it.
The
I might as well leave.
I needed but luckily I had you two, and that's what brought me out of that. And now when I look back at it, you know, I got a first. I wanted to kind of go back to him and go, I got a first, so remind me again why I'm not good enough to be here. And
but you know what, I think we should have
I think we should deliver that message in person.
Yeah. Trip. Are you coming on to before you go back to America
him.
Let's go see him.
Look, I'm sure he's not a bad guy, but that was...
No, there are no bad people in the world. Just
that's what he told me.
Just
but
bad behaviour from
back,
bad circumstances.
I agree. Bringing it all back, the reason why I'm sharing this with people, because what I was trying to get at is, up until him, even with evidence in front of me, I still didn't feel that I was good enough. And a lot of people will get the job and go, yeah, but I didn't deserve it. It was imposter syndrome. You know, I've got imposter syndrome. And so I think that really what people are probably thinking is, how do they deal with that? What
exactly.
can they do evidence isn't enough?
Yeah, I think part of it is being told, again, we get told, a lot of people get told from a young age, don't brag about your achievements, right? Because you already said it, you know, you didn't want to do it because you didn't want to make other people feel 100%. Bad. And ultimately, there's another way of looking at that. Why not? It's not bragging about it. Why not just talk about your achievements to inspire others instead of making them feel bad? Who decided that would make people feel bad? Why can't we inspire people? Because don't we all want everyone to be as good as they can be?
And also, not everyone's good at everything. So we've all got good things and bad things. So if we don't focus on our strengths, all we're going to do is focus on our weaknesses. And the thing is, I was academic. Put me on a bloody sports field. It was an embarrassment. Do you know what I mean?
I might as well not turn up. Can I just tell you, I remember going to those sports days. and hey, cheering for you.
Excuse
yeah.
me.
And I was the last person shouting.
She did. I won the sack race. Don't take that away from it. Sack race. If ever, if I won a sack race.
Has got to be year one or two.
Yeah, it was.
Hunter, the age doesn't matter. I won a sack race. If ever there is a serious athletic competition that involves a sack race, I will do a good job. That's all I'm saying.
Funnily enough, you were quite good at sport.
Egg and spoon.
Was it you with the egg and spoon?
I think we're going year one or year two. I think we're going too far back.
But we say focusing on your strengths is a great...
That's what I'm saying.
There is a great statement, and I can't remember who said this. Maybe we should find it. That if you ask a fish to climb a tree,
oh, I've heard that, yeah,
it will spend its whole life thinking it's an idiot or something like that.
No, but it's so true. And that's the thing. The people, I accept people will have looked at me and gone, oh, she's so lucky, she's so academic. I felt like crap. Because I didn't feel, you know, I felt like I was making people feel bad. But other people would have looked at me and thinking, oh, she's so academic. But like I said, everyone's got their strengths. Yeah. And so why would we not focus on our strengths?
And that's the way forward, isn't it?
100% that's the way forward.
So to build your self-esteem, number one is to concentrate. And so this is, I suppose, these are little tips for our handbook to happiness, our metaphorical handbook to happiness. Give us some tips. The first tip is to concentrate on what you can do and what you can, not what you can't. I think the other thing is that if somebody gives you a compliment, saying thank you, no matter how uncomfortable, will also help to raise your self-esteem and start to help you to feel better about yourself. Because, you know, how many of us, somebody gives us a compliment and we play it down? And that's like saying, number one, I don't believe you. And number two, I don't deserve the compliment. So when we start to say thank you on an unconscious basis, we're sort of going, okay, I'm going to accept this compliment because I must deserve it. So that's a really great way to start building confidence.
I'm going to say there's three facets to compliments. I think compliments are amazing. Not only accepting compliments and just saying thank you, which a lot of people don't do, but actually giving compliments, because we all have those times when we look at someone, you're walking down the street, someone at work, you know, someone at college or university or whatever, and we think, I really like that. I like what you're wearing, I like your hair, I like your bag, I like your shoes, whatever. We have that thought and we just walk past them and never say it. Whereas if you actually vocalise that, number one, it might be the best thing that anyone said to them that day. But secondly, it gets you into the mode of going talking to a stranger. And actually, you're sharing something nice.
But that builds your confidence as well, talking to people.
Absolutely, it does. Mm. Yeah, so you're going talking to a stranger and saying something nice. And again, getting into that habit, because you are sort of stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit. But a lot of people say they've got social anxiety. But you still have those nice thoughts, so share them. And then the third facet to compliments is actually learning to compliment yourself.
There you go. Now, this is a big one.
It is a big one because that's an antidote to imposter syndrome. Because if you look at the things that you've achieved in your life and you realise, actually, no one's giving you these things, you know, no one's giving you your job out of charity, no one's giving you your university place out of charity. They've done it because of the things that you've achieved. Yeah. And the reason why... for me, the two reasons why we're not familiar with those is, number one, we're told not to make a big deal out of them because it upsets other people. And the second thing is we evolve very quickly and we tend to focus on the things that are going wrong as opposed to the things that have always gone right.
And I think that's human nature because we're fixers, aren't we? So we don't need to fix the things.
But you're
absolutely right.
What would be a really great idea is if we found one really lovely thing about ourselves and started complimenting ourselves. So every time you look in the mirror or at least just once a day, you know, just saying like, you know, I am kind, or, you know, I've got great eyes, or I like my hair, whatever it might be, is a great place to start.
Yeah, and just to touch on that from a science perspective.
Oh, have we got Is it science corner?
Just to touch on that, I think that, you know, often if you were to ask people, as we do in therapy, is to ask people to finish the sentence "I am" with the first word that comes to mind, it's, you know, 95% of the time it's a negative.
It is.
And without realizing, that's the message that we're saying to ourselves all the time. You know, if your first thought is "I am stupid," then that's something that you are exercising and practicing all the time, saying to yourself without even realizing it. And what we know from neuroscience is that, you know, because a lot of people think affirmations and that sort of thing is just a bit of nonsense, but actually there is quite a bit of science behind it. So from a neuroscience perspective, every time we have thoughts and we do things, we exercise a certain neural pathway in the brain. And just like a muscle, the more we use it, the stronger it gets. And then the stronger it gets, the easier it is to do. It comes to mind a lot faster. So let's say, for example, brushing your teeth. Because you've done that every single day, you're exercising those same neural pathways over and over and over. Now when you brush your teeth, you don't have to think about where you're brushing. You just mm-hmm. do without even thinking. Or even when you drive the car, you get so used to it, don't you, that you kind of do it in autopilot. And that's because those neural pathways are so strong because we're doing it so often. And equally in the same way, when we stop exercising something, just like a muscle, it will start to wither away. And your brain does that because it wants to use its resources for whatever you need it for to be most effective, which is why you forget the language that you learned at GCSE because you're not exercising it anymore. It's now O-level, should we say, for your age list. All level.
God, you're getting so cheeky.
So basically, you're saying use it or lose it.
Yeah, basically. That's what we're saying here. So my point being is, sorry, bring me back. My point being
why did I think start it or fart it? I don't know why I went into that head. Start affirmations.
But what's the second part?
I have no idea. It just came into my head, so I thought I'd vocalise. I just thought I'd vocalise.
She's bringing her own gas to the equation. Anyway, I'm going to bring it back to the science. So basically, if we are constantly practicing negative thoughts about ourselves, they're getting very strong, they're coming to mind more easily. Whereas if we start to practice positive thoughts about ourselves, which might at first feel quite uncomfortable because we don't have the neural pathways for that, as we exercise them more and more and more, those thoughts start to get stronger, those neural pathways get stronger, come to mind more easier, and the negative ways of thinking start to weaken and wither away. So practicing affirmations and thinking about ourselves positively, and like I say, focusing on our achievements, and not even just achievements, but the nice qualities about ourselves. We all have things that we probably do like about ourselves and that we don't. So why focus on the things we don't? We can focus on the things that we do and that are actually really good about us.
Do you know, an interesting exercise might be to think about all the nice things that people have said about you and write them down. Because
why did they say them? Because like it's hard to compliment
for the sake
people.
Of it, did they?
People don't compliment people left, right, and centre because it's not that easy.
And I was going to add in a fourth facet.
Really? Right,
what I was going to say is, so I know we've talked about accepting compliments, but I think we're so fast to disregard compliments from our friends and family because we think they're just saying it because they want to.
Well, why? They always want
that. I think by doing that, we're so quick to disregard the people that matter, saying their opinions don't matter, which is so wrong because these are the people that know us the best. They know us. They've spent more time than anyone else.
True.
And their opinion, if anything, it should mean more. And they matter to us, so why shouldn't their opinion matter just as much?
And if it's people close to you, you can even ask them, like, what makes you say that? So let's say, for example, you know, someone close to you says, oh, I just think you're so inspiring. Well, you know, ask them, what is it that makes, you know, what is it about that person that makes them feel that way about you, you know?
Yeah,
and explain and go, oh yeah, I have done that. Because we lose sight, other people see what we're doing, but we lose sight of what we're doing.
And there's so
ourselves.
Many things that I've noticed that we won't have done because, I mean, we live with ourselves 24 hours a day and we get used to our own behaviours and things and we don't necessarily see everything that we're doing. Whereas other people, like, you know, a fresh pair of eyes can see a lot more than what we can and just see what other people value about us. And especially asking for the evidence, I think, is a really nice thing.
Yeah,
and
reminding you of...
proves it to us more, doesn't it, as well?
Reminding you of, you know, you said how hard it was that you'd never get through this and how hard this time was, and look, you did. You lose sight of those things, and friends or close family can point those things out to you. So.
But you know, I think as a rule in general, people struggle to accept compliments.
Yeah.
It's sort of like we
brush them off very easy, don't we?
It took practice for me. I'm not going to lie. I had to say thank you for a compliment took time, you know, because it was all there was always a comeback, you know. So if it was, oh, you know, I love what you're wearing, I'd come back with, you know, I got this in the sale.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a case of practicing. It is like a muscle, you know. And then just to sort of go back to where we started and I just like to give a myth busting about a lot of people think that, you know, oh, I was just born like this. You know, I was born with low self-esteem. I was born feeling bad about myself. That's not true. You know, it is an absolute myth that you are born with sort of thinking anything of yourself.
That you created it.
It's, you're born with it, or that you
personally created that.
Absolutely.
I think as a child, you don't even think about your self-esteem. You don't look at yourself at any point and think anything other than just...
But not even yourself. You don't have a reference to anything.
No, you show
a child an object, anything. They've got no reference to whether that's a good or bad thing because they've not had any learning from, you know, situations.
So
to
we can
have
comfortably
that.
Say that all behaviours are learned, can't we?
I think so. I mean, that's obviously aside from
basic reflexes.
Yes.
Like, for example, if you poke someone in the eye, they'll blink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't just sit there staring.
Should we test it? But
would you call it a behaviour, though?
But that's a reflex, not a behaviour,
is
it?
It's a reflex. It's the same with, like, touching something hot and moving.
But I'd just like
to... That's a bit of science. It's just basic reflexes.
But one thing that, you know, as you know, you can't be anxious in any way. You can't be upset in any way if you're laughing.
Oh, here we go.
And you know, so we've got to just have a moment to consider a little bit of laughter. So, and I was thinking, here we are recording, recording today. And I just wondered that, you know, think of like the biggest animal on the planet, which is a whale. And they swim literally thousands of miles. Right? And I thought, what do they do when they're covering all that distance and they're all together? They obviously listen to a podcast.
It's a group of whales, it's called a pod.
Thanks.
Thanks, Fonte.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I think anybody listening.
I'm sorry, when you tell a joke and it needs an explanation, it's not really the best joke, is it? But I know some people listening would have been heartily laughing.
If any of you are out there were heartily laughing, please reach out to us to prove us wrong. I think because these three on this side of the table, that we all agree that. Yeah.
Have you got anything better up your sleeve?
Have we got anything better?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I can share something with you.
You do realise you just asked for another one?
Yeah.
You know what?
Can I share this with you? Because this is quite
important.
There's got
to be something better.
I don't know if this is serious or this was a joke, right? But this was an email that we received. Just bear with me a second. Let me find this email. So this is an email that we got into our office and it was sent to me. I've not shared this with you before. I was saving it because it was so good, right? Okay. So this is the email. Someone asking for help, and he says, my wife has left me because of my anxiety and paranoia. That was it. That was just the email. But then there was a follow-on email. Never mind. She's just returned from the shops.
No. Is that real?
Yeah.
What? Wow.
I think it might have been a joke.
Oh.
Oh, because he was paranoid.
I got that.
Yeah, and then he sent a separate email. Never mind. She's just returned from the shops.
Right, okay. That's probably somebody sending a joke because they know that you're a bit of a joker. Right. Practicing. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
Just to start from the beginning. Okay. So nobody is born with or without self-esteem. This is something that we either acquire or have destroyed through our lives as a consequence of not just the people around us, but our interpretation of their behaviours. And just to sort of summarise where self-esteem stealers can come from, you know, we've already said people at school, you know, other people around us, bullies, etc. Definitely that has a bearing. I mentioned about parents, you know, whether that be, you know, purposefully or inadvertently, picking you up constantly to try and make you a better person. But as a child, that might make you think, they're always having a go at me, so I'm not good enough.
Another one I'd throw in there as well, which I can't speak from experience, is siblings. Because whilst we are, you know, the dream team at this end of the table, obviously I know for a lot of people saying therapy that there's a lot of competition, especially with close, I mean, we've got quite a big age gap, but with closer siblings, a lot of sibling rivalry and putting each other down to try and, because they feel like parents prefer that sibling.
Always.
So putting, and it's not meant with malice, but the sibling may put the other person, other sibling down to try and make themselves feel better because they feel bad.
Of course. And if you're a child that's, for example, not very academic and you have a sibling that is, you know, you see your parents, you know, oh great, you know, you did great in that test, and seeing your parents building your sibling, and you might think, oh, you know, that I'm getting no attention, then the other sibling that's getting no attention may play up or start to pull the other one down just to give them to elevate their own personal status,
make them feel
a bit stronger, a bit more in control, so that can have a bearing as well. But yeah, siblings is a very good example, because even with you two, for example, look, you know, you two are great mates, you love each other, I love that you have a friendship, but I guess growing up, having an 8-year age gap, you looked after Hunter, so you would speak for Hunter, for example, because why wouldn't you?
Still do.
Yeah. But you would do. Now that comes from a good place, because this is my little brother and I'm going to look after him kind of thing. But he could have perceived that as I haven't got a voice, for example.
Yeah.
And so was there any malice there? No, there wasn't. But this is how things can happen. So I think what you have to do is understand, look at your life and go, okay, who's ever made me feel bad? Who's ever pulled me down? And then consider their motive.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then not just consider their motive, but consider, okay, what if it was something better? What might that have been?
Mm. How did I get it wrong?
And you can even speak to them if it was siblings. Let's say that I had that problem with Hunter. I would feel, I mean, I know not everyone has that relationship, but if it's someone like a parent or sibling that you've still got a close relationship with, I would feel comfortable to say to Hunter, I remember when we were little and this happened and it the made sash. Me feel really bad, and I'm sure you didn't.
Oh, the sash
to.
Didn't make you feel bad.
No, not the sash. No one needs to know about the sash.
I think we should but expose anyway, sash gate.
1 second, I was just gonna say, you can ask the sibling, and like in that case, I know Hunter would explain and go, oh my god, no, I didn't mean it like that. It of was course. That or whatever. Yeah. So sometimes even asking the person.
And I think rationalizing often. Now as well and comparing it to now, and even with the people around you, if they felt like you didn't have a voice or anything like that, going now as an adult, I do have a voice. I look after myself. I'm independent. Like I am. Things have changed, and that's important to realize.
Would you like?
Definitely.
Would you?
You're gonna have to share Sashgate now.
I've tried to bury Sashgate deep inside. I don't fully remember all the details.
He's repressed it.
So, what do you remember?
What I remember is Liv testing me on certain areas.
Okay, can I just give
as if she was a scout leader.
Can I just give a backstory? Correct. I decided to set up my own version of scouts because I'd heard about it and I'd never been. And I was like, that sounds fun.
So you can already see how accurate it was to the actual scouts. Like, God, you've never been.
Exactly. So I decided, I named myself Brown Owl for my scouts group that was Hunter. And basically, like, I made him, like, earn badges. So, like, I made him do, like, tests and stuff. And then, like, if he passed them, he would get badges. And I made him a sash.
Yeah, I remember the sash. It was pink
and
green.
And the badges were on the sash.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. It wasn't. Really. Great fashion choices.
You used to wear it on.
So we have photos. Yeah. Anyway,
he used to go around and he'd wear his sash, his green and pink sash that I made him. And then, like, he'd do tests and then he'd, like, stick back. Like, I'd get stickers for him and, like, I'd give him stickers. And then basically the traumatising part of our childhood was when, I think
you
were small. Tiny. Anyway, that's why he doesn't remember it. But basically I told him that today we're going to do his first aid badge, and I made him, like, some questions and, like, he had to answer them. And I asked him these questions and marked them. And basically he got, like, 9 out of 10. But the one he got wrong was, I asked him, if the house set on fire and we had to run out, would you take your valuables or would you run? And he said that he'd take his teddy bear. And I was like, no, that's wrong. Like, it's wrong. And then he asked for the results of his test and I told him he'd failed. Because, you know, it's an important learning. He could have been injured in that fire. Saying, I was trying to save him.
I still 100% would take my valuables out. There's been multiple fire alarms at uni and I have got dressed, taken a bag of my stuff with me and then left before I did it.
So,
trauma you caused.
I remember in LA, we were in LA and there was a fire alarm in our apartment building. I was in the shower and I'm going, oh, so we need to go. And he's there with a massive bin bag and I'm, what are you doing? He went, do you want this makeup bag or do you not? And I was like... and I didn't know what to do. I had this massive conflict. Wow. When he was 3, I taught him, don't collect your valuables, but he's got my makeup bag in his hand going, do you want it or do you not?
Just saying,
I thought it was a real fire.
If our house burnt down and we were outside on the street, you'd be grateful that I brought our things, our clothes with us, so we're not out there naked on the street.
With your makeup.
You know?
With
your makeup.
I love the fact, Hunter, that you've stood by your mom.
I mean, so safety, great. I'm just saying, like, obviously, if the house is coming down, I'm going to stay in there and run back in for, like, my laptop, but equally.
Yeah. No, if there's
a window,
taking it. To happiness.
Yes, let's summarise.
What page are we adding today?
Right, so yeah, if anybody's got any tips for our metaphorical handbook to happiness based around loving who you are will make you happier, has anybody got anything that they'd like to...
Well, I'd like to start off saying that, you know, your value, whatever up until this moment you thought it was, take a new look at it and determine a new value for yourself. Put the right value on who you are.
And my advice is definitely to say thank you for a compliment, give a compliment, and also
compliment yourself.
You guys, anything before we sign off?
I think reflecting on the people around you is a really big thing, because for a very long time, it was only actually recently I realized this, that the people around you should uplift you, should bring you up. And I think that that's something that I've really realized now. Whereas before, I'm not saying they necessarily brought me down, some of my friends, but I didn't come away feeling better. I didn't come away feeling like I had more energy. And now I feel better myself. And as I said, like, I've got better people around me and I've attracted better people around me. I feel so much better because of that. And when I put my phone up and I open my messages and I see my friends on there, I feel so much better seeing them and seeing them, they message me. And just, like, I've set funny pictures of them that memories that we've got and stuff like that. And that really brings me up. I think that's really what friends should do, should really bring you up. And even when just in terms of self-esteem, friends who compliment you and make you feel valued and make you feel like you're worth something, even just beyond just being nice people and making you just have a nice time.
But that really change, Hunter, started with you.
It did. Yeah, it did.
So that's the thing, knowing that you've got the power to start that change.
Yeah, 100%. But equally, it's a lesson that I've learned because of that. But equally, I still think even if you're in a place where you don't feel very confident about yourself, still reflecting on the people around you and questioning the value they add to your life and whether they bring you up, I think is really important. It's something that you should reflect on.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, taking stock of the people around you. Yeah.
Have you got anything?
I would say definitely questioning who's made you feel bad and the motives behind that, because a lot of it can be misunderstanding. A lot of it can be a child's perspective, which was certainly what helped me through my situation was looking at the realize and understand it. Even the people that made me feel bad back then, if I met them now, they probably wouldn't now as adults because they were children themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
So questioning people's motives, why people made you feel bad. If it's parents, for example, what were the intentions? And questioning them, because actually, were they a good source of information? Were they a child themselves? Did they not know any better? Did they have good motives, but it just didn't come out? So questioning that, because...
I would hope as a 28-year-old, you wouldn't put me in a sash again now.
Well, I mean, you won't wear the sash. Yeah, well, that's true. I hope not.
Just so you know, I'm actually 27, so...
oh my God, you are.
Maybe not as a 28-year-old, but as a 27-year-old, you know.
Need to watch my back then for the next year.
Well, there we go. So definitely questioning, you know, why do you feel bad and what were the motives of those people that gave you that information that made you feel that way, knowing that we weren't born feeling that way. And the other thing would be just thinking about how you describe yourself and what you say to yourself. So if you were to think about how you would end that sentence, I am, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And then if it is something negative, thinking of a positive something that you really value about yourself, because like I said, there's always going to be things that we do and don't like about ourselves. But what do you really value about yourself? What is a really good quality that you have, and rewriting that sentence and practicing that as an affirmation to reinforce that thought in your brain, I think is really, really helpful and important.
So to finish off, I'd like to tell you all that I love you all, and we love you guys for listening and joining us on our Handbook to Happiness podcast, and we're spreading love with you guys so that you can feel just that little bit better today. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Wherever you're listening to this podcast today, do be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and we'd be incredibly grateful of a 5-star review.
Oh, and don't forget to recommend our podcast to your family and friends.
And if you'd like to have a look at some more free resources, take a look at our website, nickandeva.com.
If you want to drop us a question, we'd love to hear from you. Send it to admin@speakman.tv.
And you can follow us. We're at The Speakmans on all social media platforms. On YouTube, we're Handbook to Happiness Pod. If you are struggling, do be sure to speak to your general practitioner. And all that's left to say is that we appreciate you spending time with us today.